Here with me I have Jamie Klein. He is the Director of Biofuels and Business Development for the National Corn Growers Association. And Jamie, you kicked off the conference here, this land use conference, where we're talking about things like carbon and land use and life cycle analysis and a whole bunch of things that I'm starting to try to figure out. But what is really the purpose for putting on this conference on behalf of NCGA?
We've had some regulations come out from CARB, the California Air Resources Board, and EPA on the renewable fuel standard this year. Those brought up a lot of questions, as Dr. Bruce Babcock brought up from Iowa State. A lot of these are based on assumptions. They're based on economic theory and thought. And the key thing we want to do is to have agribusiness and other folks start actually asking the questions, are these assumptions correct? Do we have the latest and greatest updated analysis? Because a lot of times, for instance, some of the models are based on an 01 to 04, some of them based on even older information. We find that our scores improve dramatically when we update that information in a real-life modern agriculture situation.
Well, you've got some very diverse speakers or presenters here. I mean, at least they're working for very diverse organizations, from EPA to, like you mentioned, university researchers and people who are actually working on some of this modeling or analysis to try to come up with some, I guess, valid method for measuring and basing proposed regulation on. First of all, just how important is this whole issue to agribusiness and corn growers in particular?
Literally, I'll throw two facts out. The way CARB wrote their regulations, in 2012, corn-based ethanol will not be welcome for a over 1 billion gallon market on the West Coast. That does impact us. That's 10% of our current market as far as ethanol goes. The other thing to remember, Dr. Bruce McCarl from Texas A&M just brought up that if you look at both the RFS and the climate change bill, he's modeling that it takes 27.1 million acres out of production across the U.S. I think that might impact us as well.
Yeah, I just would say that it would. So I guess when you look towards the end of this thing, what do you hope will be accomplished by bringing together all these diverse groups? And, you know, I know we have a lot of corn grower interests from different corn organizations, various state grower associations, et cetera.
If we can increase communication and get the latest information to the modelers and hopefully also work with the modelers to show agriculture as it really happens in the field, then I think we've accomplished our purpose. One example from CARB modeling with the GTAP model is if they would change the way they model the dried distiller's grain, seems like a pretty innocuous piece of that whole puzzle. But it actually takes the score that we're penalized on down by two-thirds. Now, you know, it's not like golf. You want to have a low score, and we're going to try to figure out a way to keep our farmers with the most market they can, both around the world as well as in the U.S.
Well, as I look through the program, it really seems like even though you have different sessions or even breakout sessions, really there's a real commonality into what all these speakers are talking to. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like you've got a lot of different people who have a lot of different opinions on how these models should be put together, right?
Very much so. Whether we're looking at how to model those DDGs, how to model increased yields. In fact, our presenters can't even agree on how much we're going to increase yields. Or, in fact, we've got one presenter says we're not going to increase corn yields anymore in the future. Now, those of you that have been on the field this year reporting over 160 on an average type of yield, you might differ with him a little. But, again, he's in research and modeling. He's not in the field. So how do we bridge that gap? But everything, again, from yields, DDGs, but also, we got to look at the other side of the fence. When we put fertilizer on, what are the nitrous oxide emissions? That's actually 20% of our score from a corn production perspective.
So for people who may not understand not just how these models are put together, but where are these type of models going to be used where they will have an impact on on us as businessmen, regardless of whether we're in agriculture or not, for that matter.
You know, we've already mentioned the federal legislation. We've mentioned California. We've got another state in the Northwest, Oregon, looking at, and they're just saying they're going to use whatever CARB comes up with. We've got somewhere between 8 and 11 states in the Northeast also looking at putting together a low-carbon fuel standard. And if you start to see those blocks start to take place, any group that's interested in this is going to turn to about 3 to 5 models across the whole U.S. to model this type of impact.
And so, having said that there are these different models, there really is not at this point, or do you foresee that there might be some agreement at some point on a model that everybody can agree on?
I actually see it going the other way. We may make changes to our current models, but if I was an enterprising researcher right now, I'd put together a model that supposedly bridges some of these gaps. So I actually see some new models coming to the forefront. Now, will they be effective? Time will only tell.
Well, thank you very much, Jamie Klein with National Corn Growers Association. He is the guy who has kind of welcomed us all here, and will be wrapping things up when this conference is over. From the NCGA Land Use Conference, I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.